Welcome to the IIA three-part podcast series with Ben Hammersley on digital technology and the future impact on business. Chapter 3, Changing Perceptions and Emerging Risks.
We're starting to see all sorts of new forms of risk, new forms of corporate, legal, and financial and personal risk evolve out of these new technologies. And the most important one, I think, the one that really is sort of going to be the fundamental geopolitical question of the next 20 years is one around protecting objective truth. In many ways, you guys, this is your role, right? You are the keepers of truth within the organizations that you work for. You're the ones who say what is true or not, right? You're the ones who get to sign off on stuff. And when you sign off on the thing, that signature means this is real now. Imagine, for example, that your company was attacked by a ransomware attack. If you've never seen those before, there was an example a few months ago in a hospital just up the street from me. Their electronic health records had got a virus that encrypted all those records. And the author of that virus said, if you pay me $20,000 in Bitcoin, I'll give you the key and you can unlock the health records. And of course, the hospital paid the ransom because you can't run a hospital if you can't see patient records. It's very, very cheap and easy crime. Super successful. Now, encrypting health records is pretty blatant, right? You know when it's happened. But the next level of cognitive attack is when you just have a virus that goes in there and you say, if you don't pay me $20,000 in Bitcoin or whatever your ransom is, I'm just going to change random numbers in databases in your system. And I'll do it at a rate which is slow enough that you won't really notice it, so that your backups that you have on a rolling basis, and you keep the last year's worth of backups or whatever, so that over time those backups can become entirely corrupted as well. What would happen if you woke up one day in a financial services organization or in any services organization and you realized that, you know, 2% of all of the numbers in every system you had were wrong? Just wrong, off by one or two. What would happen to you personally if it turns out that something was going through your address book in your phone, and as we know in the modern world, nobody remembers any phone numbers other than their own and their own when they were 5 years old, right? Imagine something was going through your address book and was just randomly switching digits around in your phone numbers. Very rapidly, your life will be destroyed, at least telephonically. An internal audit, in many ways, is the last bastion of self-defense at a geopolitical level as well. Because it turns out if you want to attack a country, you don't have to bomb it, you don't have to invade it, you just have to mess with it. The Sony Pictures hack that came about a few years ago because they were made a film that took the mickey out of President Kim of North Korea. When the North Koreans hacked Sony Pictures, the thing that they did, which really, really, really hurt Sony Pictures, wasn't like, you know, burning down a studio. It wasn't setting fire to something. It wasn't blowing something up. It was releasing everybody's salary details onto the open intranet. Because suddenly everybody realized the objective truth about their organization. And quite a lot of people resigned and a lot of people sued for the money they thought they were owed. Protecting objective truth within your organization is the fundamental object of audit. And that turns out to be the fundamental last bastion of national geopolitical self-defense in the 21st century. Upsettingly enough, for those of you who came in here thinking you had a nice job, turns out you are now the Avengers. Malcolm Gladwell, a few years ago, wrote a book in which he had this, posited this idea, which some people have debunked a little bit, but let's go with it anyway, where he said that to become a master of something required deliberate practice for 10,000 hours. Deliberate practice being concentratedly doing something and giving yourself feedback on how well you're doing it. For you to be any good at the digital world would have required you to do it deliberately for an hour and a half a day, every day of the week for the last 25 years. No one is any good at this stuff. We have to develop within ourselves some cognitive tools to help us get to a position where we can start to be good. One of the things that we can do is we can start to learn to think about modeling in our heads how organizations and cultures change as they are driven by technology. In politics, we call this the Overton window. The Overton window is the acceptable range of political arguments. And the Overton window moves a lot. And spotting the direction in which it's moving is one way that you can learn to be a futurist. So, for example, a very good example of the Overton window is one of marriage equality. 20 years ago in the UK, it would have been utterly unthinkable to have gay marriage. Then the Overton window shifted. David Cameron saw that it happened. He put it to Parliament. They had a free vote. It was made legal. And now, if you ask young people, they'd be like, really? There was a time when, really? It's a bit weird. It's always, surely. So we have to identify these Overton windows. And one of the Overton window identifying things we can play is called the grandparent game. This is a game you can play at home. Let's say you're having a family dinner this Sunday. This is a particularly good one. The grandparent game is this. What you have to recognize is that you all have grandparents or elderly relatives, maybe long dead, but nevertheless, you have elderly relatives that you remember who would have or do have political and social views that you yourself find completely abhorrent. You know, don't mention that thing to Granny because she goes off on one, right? The grandparent game comes as this. What political or social view do you hold right now that your grandchildren will find completely abhorrent? Maybe tonight, over a beer, you can sit around the table and think about that. And once you start to think about that, you'll identify the Overton window. You'll identify things that are shifting. And there's all sorts of things that we can start to list, which our grandkids will start to go like, really? You did what? Huh. You guys were weird. The best way to get yourself into this mindset of living in the 21st century is through this sort of continuous mindfulness. Continuous mindfulness of the processes and practices within your organization. In Japan, this is called Kaizen, but I like to call it constant legacy-free reinvention. And it's a technique, you, as a consultant, you have to have a long phrase. CLFR. This is how you do it. It's a personal practice. It's something you can do. I'm going to teach you how to do it now. I wouldn't do it today. Today's too busy. But do it tomorrow. You'll find it very rewarding. This is what you have to do. From the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed, this will slow you down a little bit, but it's worth it. From the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed, pay attention to everything that you physically do. And ask yourself of everything that you physically do two questions. The first question is, what problem am I solving by doing this action? I woke up this morning and I brushed my teeth because it felt like something had died in there. Okay. The second question is, if I was to solve this problem today for the very first time and I had to use modern technologies, how would I do it? Now, like I say, this might slow you down because you're going to have to sit there with your iPhone and like Google stuff constantly throughout the day. But what you'll find very rapidly as you do this exercise throughout the day or over many days or over a weekend or whatever it is, whatever you choose, you will find that the vast majority of the stuff you do, you are doing wrong and old-fashionedly. And over a constant practice of this, you'll get yourself to a point, pretty rapidly actually, you'll get yourself to a point where everything you do is cutting edge. And I don't mean like, you know, mirror shades and like hoverboards and stuff like that. I just mean everything is brought up to date to the modern world. To think about the future, to answer this question of what the future of internal audit looks like, we have to be able to think clearly about the world of the future. And to think clearly about the world of the future, we have to ourselves be living right in the present. If you apply those mindfulness techniques about everything you do in the world, and invest that time and energy to bring yourself up to the future, then moving forward into the future is simply just moving forward one day at a time. And anybody can do that. And having cleared the path ahead of you of the anxiety of keeping up with stuff, because you are the trailblazer in your organization at that point, that will then give you the cognitive bandwidth to think about the implications of these technologies. And to think about the roles that you have, both personally and professionally, within a world where we have these technologies with these new and interesting ethical and professional dilemmas. If you can think clearly about those technologies in that way, your future is pretty much assured. Because as I've said, both in a corporate environment and a geopolitical and national environment, audit is the last bastion of self-defense. You guys are it. It's your responsibility. You are actually the Avengers. Thanks very much.